This is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Good morning, sports fans. It's a pleasure to have you here for the big Monday show. And as a great show and the first of our big shows as we begin our ascent into fall. Thanks for joining us here today as we resume our regular schedule of programming here on Locks of the Week Radio. Thanks again. I hope you are having a great Monday. Hot Monday. But, you know, it's time for me to finally acknowledge that I have now moved. We took a two-week hiatus. I think it was 2 weeks. As we moved from Santa Barbara to West L.A. And now I'm here. Hello, West L.A. We're doing the show now from the midst of the real big city, L.A., Los Angeles, California, where sports is always happening, whether it's with the Dodgers, the Lakers, UCLA, USC. There's sports going on everywhere here. It's amazing. It's remarkable. So I moved in, have a new place to live, have a new day job, and I have restored the studio operations here for this podcast. Everything's all set up. The computer's ready to go. Everything's all set. Tested the levels. Everything's good. We're good. We're set up. Getting ready to go. And this is the dawn of a new era, the beginning of the rest of our lives. Welcome to LA, yes. And now with this being here, we can now broadcast so many big stories, and I can give you even more firsthand accounts of games and things. I'm really looking forward to it. This is going to be a great year here in sports. So thanks for listening to us all this time. We now originate officially from Los Angeles. The show can truly be called Dave in the City, the real city, the real big city. Santa Barbara was great to me, and I will miss it so much. And it's there's a lot to it that I have appreciated over the years. But I must say, I'm ready for now. I'm ready for the future. I'm ready for now. And now is here. And here we go. We're about to talk about so many things related to sports today. And when we do this, well, as we go forth here in this summer, we're going to have some more in-studio appearances by people that we know. Certainly, we're going to have some visits from our own friend Andrew Jacobson. Our interviews will not only be over the telephone, but now he'll be in studio to talk with us more because he's also local to the area. On top of that, we will still get our reports from Jacob Rosales and Tony Jimenez and Mark Perez and Matt Shapiro and anybody. I mean, I know I've left out a bunch of people, but we're going to have a really good time here. So I am glad to have you here with us, joining us here as we prepare for fall. And, you know, there's so much to talk about in sports, no matter what time it is. The hardest time to come up with sports topics usually is around these couple of months. July and August, the toughest months. There's only one actual sport active, any professional league, that we really think of, and it's baseball. That's the one. All the other sports are pretty much dormant. So for those 2 months, baseball is king, July and August. After that, it's football time. You have college football starting. You have pro football starting. I mean, this is stuff we all know already. We know about all this. There's no debate here, no secret. Everybody knows that these are the patterns we go through throughout the year. And when we come around this time next year, I'll say the same exact thing. So there's nothing new here being told. Nothing new. I know. That's very much the truth. But the fact remains, these are always the slowest months of the year. There's not really a whole lot we can do about it. We can certainly enjoy it and go out more and do more things, and a lot of us do. And then when the weather starts to cool down a little bit, we have football to keep us our company. And then eventually, we have hockey and basketball to fill in the gaps in the middle of the week. So that's great. You know, the seasons are not just in the colors and in the trees, but they're also in the kinds of sports that we see out on the court, in the field, and in anything of play. They are in the actual seasons of sport. They are in what we call the patterns of the sporting year. They are in the sports that you see on the TV screen or in the arena or on the or inside the stadium. Sports seasons change and they grow and they be transitioned into each other, just like real seasons. And I think that's really a neat thing. So even though it's a slow, possibly the slowest time of the year, you know, I always thought it was February. I really did. I thought February was the slowest month of the year. But, you know, actually, when you really think about it, it really isn't. I found a lot to talk about in February, and I really thought I'd be grasping for straws then. But we did the podcast in February, and it was fine. And we had plenty to talk about. We had lots of good stuff going on. The things that kept February rolling, besides the college basketball scene, were also what was happening in the NBA and then some off-season bits from baseball and the NFL. So I think all that rolled into one made February fine. But this time, now we're into some of the nitty-gritty details. We're into some of the tougher parts of the season in sports. But there is plenty to talk about out there. So we welcome you here. This is Dave in the city on Locks of the Week Radio. Just me today. As we start to reset, get ourselves going in our first ever L.A. show. So, you know, it's L.A. Let's talk about some L.A. things right now. Let us get into what's been happening with Lamar Odom. Well, did you hear about this? L.O. had an offer pulled from him from the table from the Los Angeles Lakers. And I think the reason is because Odom never really committed. So the Lakers ended up just saying, okay, we're going to take the offer off the table. You go figure out something else. But that didn't really preclude them from actually signing him. Here's the interesting thing, though, that's transpired over the course of this week. This week, we have learned that Lamar Odom is strongly considering an offer now from the Miami Heat to take a contract. Now, this is very interesting because most teams are offering about the same money. Year to year, it's the same money for all the teams. And when the season finished here in the NBA, Jerry Buss and company and the whole family offered a 4-year, $36 million deal with $30 million of that $36 million guaranteed. So this is a pretty big contract. It's not small potatoes. 4 years, 36. Divide that by, let's see. Yeah, is it something like, yeah, it was something like 12, something around 10, 12. It's about the mid-level exception. All right, so 36 million divided by 4. Yeah, it's right around 12, let's see, 2, 4, 6. No, it's less than 12. But it's right around 10. It's right around 10, 9, 10 million dollars. 9, 10, 10, 10. Yeah, it's actually 9 million exactly. So $9 million a year, which is right around the mid-level exception for Lamar Odom. Now we hear that Odom's about to sign a 5-year, $34 million for the Heat. Or take a 4-year contract that would give him the option to become a free agent in 3 seasons and seek an even more lucrative deal. This according to Adrian Wojnarowski of Yahoo Sports. So he's going to decline a deal that would have already given him $9 million a year for 4 years to take a 5-year deal for only $34 million. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. It seems like Odom is making the same decision that Trevor Ariza made a month or two ago. He probably took a while to get this offer from the Lakers. He thought that, well, maybe the Lakers would try to give me something bigger and better. And they didn't. And he said, all right, well, I'm just going to hang out and see if anyone else wants to bite for a much bigger deal. It hasn't happened. But all of a sudden, he's deciding to sign with the Miami Heat? And the only thing that really sets this thing in motion is this thing about the state tax. The tax in the state of Florida, there is none. And this is why you often hear about a lot of athletes and other people living in Florida because, well, they don't have to pay state tax. And so you can build these big mansions and compounds and blah, 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 blah. Well, that's all well and good, but what's the use of all this if you still have to build some other players around a guy like Dwayne Wade, for example, where you're speaking of the Heat, of course, to try and build a championship and become better? He's not getting any more money. I mean, okay, he doesn't have to pay tax, blah, blah. But you're losing out on being on the best team in the NBA. With Odom, the Lakers are most likely the best team in the NBA. I mean, I won't be so bold as to say that they're the undisputed number one single best team in Kingdom Come. But they're pretty close to it. Name me one team that could have beaten that could beat the Lakers in the playoff series with Odom and Artest and Kobe in that team. It's really hard to find one at this point. It's early. So that's why I've reserved myself a little bit. But, you know, I feel like somebody was going to swoop in and get Odom, but for this much? The tax can't be that worth it. I mean, you can't tell me that the tax is that big a deal. Yeah, I know players like to make decisions based on their own personal lifestyle and so on. So I certainly understand that. And, you know, he was a huge asset in the clubhouse, and the Lakers are definitely going to miss him. And one thing I really need to stress, I think I've said this on the podcast, maybe not, but if the Lakers lose out on Odom, they become a much weaker team. Now, at one point I said they'd be lucky to get a fourth seed. Maybe that's going a little far. But they're not going to be a top two seed. No way. You've got a lot of good players still. You got Kobe. You have Artest. You still have, right now, Pau Gasol. And you have a bunch of good players. And they managed to keep Shannon Brown. And they managed to keep some other guys. They have a good team. They're very good team. Very, very, very good team. But without Odom, without Lamar Odom, that team is really not going to be that great. They're not going to be like upper echelon, major good. And I think his reason is because it's going to deplete their bench. I know that Odom is really a starter that happened to come off the bench. But you take away so much depth from that team if you let Odom go. And this is the thing I was thinking about the whole time that they signed Artest. Well, I said Artest for Odom is fine if they kept Ariza. Well, Ariza left. Ariza's gone. So Odom's the only guy left. Odom's the only guy left with his potential for triple doubles. And, you know, having him go, man, now the Lakers become a two-trick pony. Kobe, Pau, and then the occasional basket from Ron Artest and some rebounding. That's the story. And I don't know if that's a good enough team to make it to the number one seed. So, you know, any way you slice it, I'm just not sure about this. Now, more power to Odom to try to get the best living situation. It is, you know, people will talk about, well, he's gonna do this and that, and he's gonna make more net income this way. Well, you still have to factor in the cost of moving. It's not insignificant. He has to sell his house, or just get another place to live or rent it. Point is, he's gonna lose some money in this move. That's just the truth with all players. So if the deal isn't that much more, I mean. I think he's even taking a pay cut to go to this place. At least in terms of gross money. Seems to me what happened is that Odom thought that he'd get a much bigger deal and he hasn't gotten it. But rather than eat a lot of crow, he, like Trevor Ariza, has elected to go to another team with a lesser deal to save face. I think that's what's going to happen here. Either that or Dwayne Wade and Pat Riley really put on a great show and he's just so convinced to go there and have a bigger role in that team, which I think will be the case, actually, to be honest. If Odom goes to the Heat, he will have a bigger role than he currently has with the Lakers, just empirically, because he'd probably start more games and he'd get more touches. I think that's a fair point. And not to mention that he do play to his style of offense. And he's really good as a coast-to-coast guy. So the Miami Heat would be a very good fit for him, honestly. But it's like he's going to have to start over if he has to try to get another championship. Now, the bottom line in sports is always to win. In the end, you always want to win the game. You want to win the game. You want to win all your games. You want to win the championship. That's ultimately what every professional player of anything wants to do. But, Odom's got his ring. So I don't think he's all that concerned about striving to be the best he could be at winning another ring or forming any kind of a dynasty. I think that's past. He's smart enough to recognize this. Odom's a very smart guy. He's a smart guy. But now he feels like, well, maybe I can now just get my payday, which he deserves. I think he's been underpaid the last few years, but, you know, he put that on himself. He's underperformed for so long, too. But now he's really looking for that big paycheck. And, you know, more power to him. I don't have a problem with that. It's just going to be a shame to see him go. I think that's all. It's not a mistake if Odom gets to the Heat. I don't think so at all. Actually, that might work out for him. There are some teams where it wouldn't have made that much sense, like the Blazers. Like, how is he going to get any kind of action on the Blazers? You know, that's an example. Somebody even said that they might go to the Knicks. Give me a break. Why would he go to the Knicks? They got nobody there that could really do anything specific. I mean, David Lee's fine. Nate Robinson's good. But, I mean, outside of that, they really don't have a whole lot to work with. Odom can help. He'll help any team he's on, but he's not going to really take them out of the dumpster, and that's the fact. So here you have it. Odom's about to leave the Lakers, probably. I mean, I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but if it does, I just think the Lakers are going to be a much, much weaker team, much weaker. And the Heat will be a pretty good team. I don't think they're going to make it past the semis, even with Odom. They still don't have any real answers up front. I mean, kidding me? I mean, Odom's certainly a tall enough, but they need a power guy. They need a four. They need a four to get this. I mean, Odom is technically a four, but he plays so versatile. He's a four that acts like a one or a two, sometimes a three, but he's not a four. You know, I mean, that's it. I mean, he's not a power forward. He doesn't muscle guys in the paint. He doesn't run after rebounds. He can get rebounds, but he doesn't, like, bump people around and bruise everybody. It's not Odom. It's not what he does. So, bottom line, I just think that the Lakers really blew it or Odom really blew it, but it doesn't matter. Either way, I really feel like Odom's gone. The Lakers are now a much weaker team, and you know what? Quite frankly, they're probably not going to do a whole lot this season. Yeah, they got talent. Everyone says, well, they still got Kobe. Kobe's going to be 32. And they still got Pau Gasol, and he's getting old. And they got Artest, he's getting old. And Phil Jackson, obviously, he's already old. And Derek Fisher, if he was old, then I'm just a baby. Derek Fisher's on the verge of retirement from not just from basketball, but like being eligible for AARP benefits retirement. I'm serious. I mean, come on. This team is getting old. And the youthfulness and spunk they had was a reason. He's gone. He's gone. So really, this team is really not going to be that good, I mean, relative to what people expect. I mean, they're going to be good enough to make the playoffs. They're going to be good enough to get an upper-level seed home court in the first round, but that's it. The Lakers are not a serious championship contender without Lamar Odom. I mean, they're going to be very good. They're going to look certainly good in the regular season, just assuming nothing else happens. But without Odom, I really don't think they can get over the top. They're going to get tired. They're going to be worn down. And some team's going to swoop in and beat them, like the Spurs, like the Mavericks, like the Blazers. Oh, I think the Blazers could certainly handle them, especially without Odom. Good Lord. And that's the long and short of it. I really think that's the whole story, the truth, and that's what I see. And so, you know, they're saying, well, Odom might make the Heat. He might go to another team. We don't know the truth yet. We don't know for sure what's going to happen. But I think when you add it all up, I really think that's what he's just, wherever he goes, it's not going to be LA. And I think he's done with that team. And it's unfortunate because everybody loves him. Everybody loves Lamar Odom. And Odom loves the Lakers. And he loved the lifestyle. I'm sure he loved wherever he lived. He was a huge fan of the team. He'll always appreciate it. It will not be an acrimonious parting. It will be most definitely a mutual, respectful parting. An amicable one, I meant to say. And I think it'll work out pretty well. You know, the Lakers will get on fine without him. But they're just not going to be that good. They're going to lose all their depth. And, I mean, he brings more depth than people realize. I think it's really understated how much he brings to that team. And without Odom there, they're just not going to have much to work with on the bench. I mean, on the starting five, they'll be solid. I mean, they're going to be good. But they, without the depth, they're going to get worn out pretty quickly. Maybe even halfway through the season. I mean, I really do think so. And then Artest, without Odom's personality to kind of, to loosen up the group. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? It could get ugly. It really could. It really could get really ugly for the Lakers this year. But we'll see. So Odom, leaning towards making a deal with the Heat. He probably will make some deal with some team, and it won't be LA. And that's going to weaken the Lakers. That's my take. And, well, I guess I'm just going to look forward to another, you know, season where, you know, they have a lot going in, but they come out about 50-50. So that's my thinking. And, you know, it's just something we're going to have to deal with for a little bit, Laker fans. But we got the champion. They got the championship. So, you know, that shouldn't be a big deal. It's not a big deal. There's already so much accomplished. So that's the long and short of it. You are listening to Dave in the City on Locks of the Week Radio. And, well, for a Monday, we want to keep this thing as simple as we possibly can. Proceeding our way towards about an hour long today. Probably around, I'm going to keep this around 40 minutes and no more. So, you know, here, there's a lot of things to talk about in the sporting world. But here's what I'm not going to talk about. I'm not going to talk about Brett Favre again. You know, he made this announcement that he was going to make a decision, what was it, last Friday? July 25th. He said, yeah, I'm going to make a decision on July 25th. And I just knew, in the back of my head, I had this thing down that he was going to, his decision was going to be, I didn't make a decision. And sure enough, on Friday, that's exactly what happened. He said, oh, I'm conflicted. I mean, come on. Are you going to play or not? So I'm not going to talk about this. I mean, I've already talked about it. I'm not going to talk about it again. So that's it for Favre. I'm not going to talk about Brett Favre. I'm not going to talk about Michael Vick. Will he or won't he? Will he be reinstated? I don't know what's going to happen. Who's going to sign him? Let all those pieces work themselves out. By the way, I say that Vick has served a very long, long, long punishment. I think the right thing to do is, I don't know about and a further suspension. He was already suspended for 2 years. But let the NFL and Michael Vick and all those guys work it out. When it's worked out, then I can comment on it. But there's nothing decided yet, so I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about T.O.'s reality show on VH1. Are you kidding me? Does this guy care about football at all? He cares about his body, cares about his feelings. Does he care about football? No, he cares to make this stupid reality show. You can see where his priorities are, honest to God. Jeez. I'm not going to talk about Tim Tebow being left off the preseason All-SEC team. Now, Jacob Rosales can tell you all about this, but basically what happened was Steve Spurrier just wasn't paying attention or didn't care. I think it was the latter. And did not select Tim Tebow on the preseason All-SEC team. I mean, this is so arbitrary. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about Jeremy Mayfield's drug debacle and the trial and all that. I mean, it's NASCAR for one, so I don't really pay attention anyway, and nor do I care to. And, I mean, come on. I mean, who cares? Really? I'm not going to talk about the WNBA. I'm not going to talk about the ESPYs. I'm not going to talk about David Beckham or any of the brouhaha between him and Landon Donovan. It's MLS, it's soccer, it's David Beckham. All those things are irrelevant at this point. The only guy that really matters is Landon Donovan himself, and he's part of Team USA. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. I'm not going to talk about Big Ben's sexual assault charges. It's a tough situation. It is definitely newsworthy, and it's very peculiar that ESPN didn't bring it up. But this seems like something that's going to get swept under the rug. And, you know, we never know the whole story when it comes to sexual assault charges. It's not really fair to comment on it at this time, except to say that they were made. So I won't talk about that. I'm not going to talk about bowling, although I do like bowling, but I'm not going to talk about it. And I'm not going to talk about why the AL is just so far superior to any other form of organized baseball. All other teams should bow down to American League teams. Come on. You know, everybody says, well, it's so great. It's so strong. Look how great the Yankees and the Red Sox are. That's all they ever use for example. Oh, the Yankees and the Red Sox are so good. Look at them, how they're dominating everybody. So, the Angels, the Rangers, the Tigers, the White Sox, and the Twins. Any of the big National League teams can take any of those teams. Any of them. Don't tell me the AL is so far superior, so much better than the other leagues. Yeah, I know how pitchers go apparently come into the National League and they start to dominate. Woo. That does not fly. And you know this whole thing about Edgar Renteria being so much better because he was a National League guy and he hit so much better because the National League is weaker, everything. Well, he's still in the National League and he sucks. So don't give me that either. You know? Everybody says, well, you know, the reason he struggled in Detroit was because he went from the National League to the American League. Well, he's back in the National League and he blows chunks. The AL is not that big a deal. It's better than the National League, but not by a lot. I mean, come on. I mean, look, the National League has won like 3 of the last 6 World Series. Isn't that the ultimate goal? Everybody's like, well, that doesn't mean because the AL got beat up in the playoffs. Dude, what's the point of the whole playing baseball, playing all the games, and setting up your seeds and getting their division lead and all that stuff? To win the World Series. And when you get down to it, the National League has done it almost as much as the American League in this decade. So the AL is not that superior. Sorry. Maybe it's deeper. I agree with that. It's deeper. Maybe it's got better teams, a couple of better teams pound for pound. I agree with that too. But the league as a whole, not that much better than the National League. It's not like the greatest thing that ever was made. No. No way. All right, so I guess I am talking about it. But those are the things I'm not talking about. Not talking about Favre, not talking about Vic, not talking about T.O., not talking about Tim Tebow, not talking about Mayfield, the WNBA, or the ESPYs, Beckham, Big Ben, or bowling. I will talk a little bit about the AL-NL debate, but that's all. Now, speaking of AL to NL, Matt Holliday just got traded. It was on, I think it was on Friday morning. He was traded in a 4-player deal. He went to the Cardinals from the Oakland Athletics, and the Cardinals sent a bunch of guys to the Athletics in exchange. Now, the guys that the Cardinals sent were some pretty big prospects. A third baseman who was, like, ready to go, and a couple other prospects who were still in the minors. But in exchange, getting Holliday back, you know what? It's a really good trade. It's really good trade for the Cardinals. They gave up a good deal. Certainly, they have some future invested that they had to divest in order to get Holliday. And Holliday, for his part, gets to join a team with a very stacked lineup. I mean, with the A's, he had nobody. And he struggled most of the year. He struggled for most of the year. And no, it wasn't because he faced much, much better AL pitching. No! It's because he had no protection with him in the lineup. Now he's got a really good lineup around him. He's got Pujols, the best hitter in the National League. Well, I mean, Hanley Ramirez, him, Manny Ramirez, I think, are all very good hitters. So let's just say he's the best hitter in the division. Ryan Ludwig will be on his other right after him. So he's sandwiched between two really good hitters there on the Cardinals. And the Cardinals, hey, you know, I think they are going to be the team to beat. But unfortunately, that didn't really show. This weekend, the Phillies really dominated them the last two games of the series. Beat them by a bunch of runs on Saturday and a bunch of runs on Sunday. 4 home runs hit in Sunday's game. Ugh. Well, maybe the Cardinals pitchers really aren't ready for primetime after all. Tough situation. But the Cardinals are going to rebound from this. They're going to be fine. Although, their next opponent is the Dodgers, which starts tonight, actually. Woo! Or either tonight or Tuesday night. And, boy, that is going to be some game. That is going to be some series. The Cardinals usually take the Dodgers in these series at St. Louis. I mean, I really think the Cardinals are going to beat the Dodgers pretty badly. The Dodgers are playing terrible baseball right now, honestly. Yeah, they split with the Astros, but you can't split with the Astros. That's embarrassing. They swept the Reds. Yeah, well, everybody sweeps the Reds. I mean, the Cubs swept the Reds this weekend, and the Cubs are in a mess right now, and they swept the Reds. That's not a good excuse. The Dodgers are playing terrible baseball right now. Terrible. I think Manny's getting hurt. I do think so. Russell Martin's still struggling. I mean, the one guy that's been pretty good is Andre Ethier. But more importantly, the pitching is really starting to show up. And what I mean by that is that their pitching is really not that good. And now it's starting to show. Yeah, you know, Randy Wolf got rocked over the last week. Billingsley just doesn't look sharp at all. I really think he's hurt. Nobody wants to admit it. He's got some kind of strain, tendonitis, arm elbow issue, whatever. He's got something wrong with him. He does not look good. He hasn't been. I mean, he gave up 3 runs in his last start. But he's not like, oh, well, Chad Billingsley on the mound. Oh, we're going to win this game. He's not Lincecum. You know, he's not Halliday. He's not any of those guys. Chad Billingsley, I think, is just starting to struggle. He's starting to fight it a little bit. He still can't extend himself into the game. He can't get to the 7th inning consistently. And that's all I'm asking. 7th inning. I'm not saying he got to pitch a complete game every night. 7th inning. 7th inning. One more inning than 6. 2 more innings than 5. A quality start, 6 innings. One more inning. You're supposed to be the rock of the rotation. You have all these strikeouts. One more inning. So I really think he's hurt. I mean, otherwise, you would think that he'd be able to get into this stretch. But he can't do it. He can come out of it, but I really think he's hurt. Anyway, the rest of the Dodgers just sucking it up. I mean, Kershaw got rocked. Kershaw's been okay. Kershaw's been one of the good stories of the second half so far. But everybody else is just really stinking it up. Man. I mean, this pitching staff, we couldn't trust them. And now it's starting to show. It really, really is starting to show. Ugh. So there you go. So the Cardinals, I think, will take Dodgers. I think they could even sweep them in the 4 games. I really do. They got such a good lineup now. 3-4-5. I mean, who's going to defeat that lineup? They're going to take this thing. They're going to beat the Dodgers like 10-3 every game. I know their pitchers have struggled too, but I really think this is it. Dodgers are going to begin like a big old slide. They already have, really. Lost 2-3 to the Marlins. I mean, the sweep of Cincinnati makes them look less weak than they really are, because the sweep really puts them around like 500 for the last 2 weeks. But that didn't fool me at all. I really think the Dodgers are starting to really fight it, and they're going to start to become, you know, they're going to be in a tailspin pretty soon. If they don't turn this pitch around, if they don't hit better in clutch situations. No, I mean, clutch situations are fine, but I mean, if they don't, I think it's the pitching, really, is the big problem. I mean, the reason why I think it's the pitching more than anything, the hitting is fine. The hitting is just fine. They were certainly clutch on Saturday when Casey Blake got that blooper to win the game. And they certainly didn't have offensive problems when they started to make that big comeback against Florida on Sunday and fell short by 2 runs. But there was a couple of guys on base at that point when Kemp flied out to the backstop to end it for the Dodgers. So I think the pitching is a much, much, much bigger issue here. And Jason Schmidt, they tried to throw him in there. And it's the most predictable thing in the universe. A guy with no stuff, no velocity. And so, of course, you know, he gets into a good hitting fly ball hitting team, and it's over. That's what happened on Sunday. He got away with it with the Reds, which I thought was very impressive, by the way. But this guy's just not going to last very long. So the bottom line, starting rotation's a mess. And the Dodgers are going to be starting to really, really lose some games here. They got this road trip. They have, besides the Cardinals, they'll be playing the Braves, where it's fairly hot over there in Atlanta. They'll lose that series too. I'm telling you, they're going to go on a huge tailspin. Before you know it, the Rockies are going to be within 5 games of them. Guaranteed. It's going to happen. Honestly. So that's that. Giants are also in their own tailspin. Remember we were talking about the Giants when they could be the sleeper team in the NL? So much for that. They've lost almost every game you could think of over the last few days. Since the All-Star break, they've been terrible. And they lost that big series that they had to win against Colorado. Now I think they're pretty much done. And that's it. You know, that's too bad because the Giants still have great pitching. They've been on the road. Giants fans will say, though, that to watch until they start losing at home first, because they're much better at home than on the road. I agree, but they are going to lose at home. I mean, who are we kidding here? Giants are done. Dodgers are going to be done eventually. Rockies look like they're going to take the division. They just won't lose. But I'm not sold on them. I think if you have to go top to bottom, I think the Dodgers do have the best pitching overall. Because with the bullpen, I think the bullpen is pretty good. Broxton's good. Because you can't trust Broxton. He's got nothing but a fastball. The Giants pitching top to bottom is really the best. I really should correct myself. I'm thinking, Dodgers, come on. The Giants pitching is the best top to bottom. But they don't really. Their lineup has been overperforming. And now I think it's really starting to even out. It's really starting to get back to their normal levels. The hitters are really starting to hit like they're supposed to, which means that they're struggling. So there you go. It's a more interesting NL West than we think. Out in the East, the Yankees have now completely taken over as the sole proprietors of first place in the division. That's a good sign. I'm not sold on this team at all. But I have to give them a lot of credit. They've been getting a lot of wins. They remind me a little bit of the Angels somewhat because they get off on their offense and it takes a big rally for them to really get going. And they can do that. And they have a lot of stock. You can attribute part of it to the stadium, but many of their guys are good hitters anyway. I think their hitting is fine, but I'm not convinced. I don't think their starters are really that great. I mean, when they win games, it's always because they win like 5-1 or 5-3 or 8-3 or 10-9 or 16-14. It's stuff like that. I mean, they can win their occasional 3-2 game and 2-1 game, and sometimes they win a game 1-0. But overall, they're getting by because they have such a loaded offense, and they're taking a lot of advantage of the newly built Yankee Stadium, which has this unbelievable knack for allowing home runs. And yes, that works for both teams, but the Yankees have certainly found a way to take advantage of that ballpark, and that's what they're doing. I don't know, I'm not really convinced. The Red Sox had been struggling a lot over the last two weeks. They'll be fine. They'll be okay. I don't think that's going to be a big deal for the Boston Red Sox. I mean, they're definitely struggling. I mean, they had to make a trade for Adam LaRoche to fill in the gap at first base because you had guys that were sort of just fill out. They really haven't figured out what to do with that third base first base problem that they've been having ever since Old Man River, meaning Mike Lowell, went down. It's been a struggle for the Boston Red Sox, and the other thing is Big Poppy. You know, they've talked about it less, but man, the guy is just done. He's finished. Put him on a stick. He's finished. I mean, his swing is just pathetic nowadays. I mean, by comparison, I mean it's not. I mean, he can get hits occasionally, but yeah, he's really, really having a tough time, and I feel bad for him. But you know, that's it. I mean, the Red Sox have to. They have to act in favor of the team, and you know, unfortunately, he's just not that good anymore. So there you go with the Red Sox. I think they'll be fine because their pitching rotation is good and their bullpen is good. So I think they'll be fine in the end. And, you know, everyone was just assuming that the two teams in the AL East were going to get the wild card spots. I think that still holds, but the difference is now I think the Rays are now going to become a factor. They've been trying so hard to stay in this race. It's not easy when you're in that division. But they've been fine, and they'll be okay now. And so we shall see what develops over the course of the remainder of the season. That reminds me, the Jays have been trying so hard to trade Roy Halladay, but they've been asking for the moon and some other planets. And so no one's really biting. And, you know, at the end of the day, he may end up still in the Toronto Blue Jays because just the Jays' asking price was too high. But, you know, legitimately so. I mean, he is pretty much the best pitcher when you get down to it in the division, or at least he's pitching the best as of right now. And so when it comes to the Jays trying to ask for so much in return, I think it's justified personally. If they're going to get rid of a guy like this, they got to get a lot back. And I think they're doing the right thing. So I don't think that's a problem. It's just that he doesn't really fit with other players. And because Halliday's already 32, his potential for rapid decline is very high. And I think a lot of teams have figured that out. So, you know, there really aren't a whole lot of teams that really could make this kind of a move because they're going to sacrifice maybe 5 years of their future for one guy. And the only team that really fits with Roy Halladay is the Phillies. And the Phillies have rejected an offer from the Jays initially. So they'll counteroffer, I'm sure. But it just goes to show you how people can sometimes be on to things in the ownership groups, honestly. They see what that the Jays are so desperate, and they're not going to fall for, you know, a big trade. They're not going to make the Jays call the shots. All the leverage is with the other team, not the Jays. The Jays are at the most vulnerable position between the two parties. So that's the story with Roy Halladay. What remains to be seen shall be seen. By the way, yesterday, Ricky Henderson and Jim Rice were officially inducted into the Hall of Fame. Good story, but not a whole lot I can say about it. The careers speak for themselves, honestly. Never saw Jim Rice hit at all. Ricky Henderson was the man, though. I mean, he could do it all. He could steal. He could hit. Versatile players like that, and his speed was phenomenal. No question. And he had just a fantastic personality. Just a crazy guy. And it was fun to listen to when he was in interviews and so on. This guy was fun. Jim Rice... No. I hear that he didn't really have much of a interviewing career. I've looked at his records. I've looked at his Hall of Fame statistics, or his statistics throughout his career. I don't know if he really is like a true, oh, he's a Hall of Famer. Like when you look at him, boom, Hall of Fame. You know, if you have to think about it and like you kind of argue about it, he probably isn't a true Hall of Famer. In the sense that, you know, you look at him, oh, yeah, Hall of Fame, easy. But he's one of those ambiguous guys. Like well, you know, he did some good, had some good years here. He did all right here. And, you know, it was okay in this one. All right, well, let's vote him into the Hall of Fame. Like, you have to rationalize it. Like, you have to, like, look at it and think about it for a little bit. You have to really think. Do you really have to think about Babe Ruth? No. Well, Babe Ruth, boom, Hall of Fame. You know, provided there aren't any allegations or any kind of personal issues involved. Pete Rose, boom, Hall of Fame if it weren't for the gambling thing. I mean, really, all-time hits leader. You can't deny, you know, if it, other than unforeseen circumstances, the guy's hitting career is clearly a Hall of Fame worthy resume. Ken Griffey Jr., Hall of Fame, boom. You know, the guy, I mean, you've seen him play, he was phenomenal. He was so good on defense. And he had been so good on with hitting. He had a pure swing. It's a great home run swing. Just didn't try to do too much. Doesn't try to do too much. Ken Griffey Jr., all those home runs, all those hits, boom, Hall of Fame. Ichiro Suzuki, this is an interesting one. Now, his career, well, half of his career was in Japan. The other half was here in Seattle. But, you know, see, there you go. I got to think about it. Well, maybe he's in the Hall of Fame. Maybe he isn't. But as far as center fielders go, outfielders go, Hall of Fame. But, see, there you go. I had to think about it a little bit. That's kind of an iffy. And that's what I qualified Jim Rice as. Jim Rice is an iffy. He's like, well, he did okay. He had a good season here, good season here, good season here. And then, like, you had to fill in the blanks. So, like, well, he was all right here. He was pretty good. He was pretty consistent. Well, isn't the Hall of Consistent? It's the Hall of Fame. I mean, right, you know? Right. You see a guy like Tony Lazzari make the Hall of Fame, and it's like, boom, Hall of Fame. You know, especially in those days. Second basemen are, good hitting second basemen are hard to find. But, you know, I mean, I'll show you right now. Jim Rice in the Hall of Fame. You know, you think about it. I mean, he certainly is got an OPS. Let's see, you know, he's just hot and cold. I mean, he had some years where he would get Oh, look, Thunder, 39 RBIs. Some years, 62, 86, 97, which is good, very good, but it's not Hall of Fame, you know? And then there's like 87, 80, 62 RBIs and 87. 72 RBIs and 88, you know? And it wasn't because of injury. I mean, he played over 100 games both of those years. So, you know, home runs. You know, let's go to home runs. Well, he had a great year in 1978, 46 homers. Oh, he was great in 83, 39. But then he would have other years where he like 17, 24, 13, 22. Anybody can hit 22 home runs. Yeah, even in the day when home runs were more rare than fine wine and pure gold. But, you know, and then you even look at his batting average. Well, his batting average has been pretty good throughout his career. 277, 280, 300, all right, he's been pretty good. But look at, for instance, his slugging percentage. 593, 1977, woo. 600, 1978, whoa. You know, 504, 550, and 82, or 83.
And then 467, 487, 408.
It's just like, it's just hot and cold to this guy. You know, he was the MVP for 1 year. Like, well, he was an MVP. Well, Steve Nash was an MVP for 3 years. Is he going to go in the Hall of Fame? You tell me. I mean, come on. Come on. I mean, people were just like, oh, how could he not have been in the Hall of Fame already? Well, did he have 3,000 hits? No. He had 2,400 hits? Not bad. Okay, did he have around 500 home runs? No. Did he have around, I don't know, 450? No, 382. I don't know where that puts him in the all-time list, but not near the top, I tell you that much. I mean, so you got that. Well, did he get a lot of steals? Of course not. He's a power hitter, but you get the point. I mean, so you had to think about it with this guy. So I don't think he's like a boom Hall of Fame. And I would rather the Hall of Fame be more selective that way. Frankie Henderson, boom, Hall of Fame. All-time steals leader. All-time. All-time total bases leader. Boom, Hall of Fame. It's very simple. You have to think about it, and maybe he's not in the Hall of Fame. Maybe he's not a Hall of Famer, like, not a surefire Hall of Famer. Maybe one day we should put up a Hall of Consistent. Or maybe a Hall of Good. Because, you know, the more people like this that you wrote in, and obviously, Bill Mazeroski was a complete joke. That's been gone over plenty of times. But, I mean, you know, people are like, well, when you looked at him in the batter's box, you feared him. He was intimidating. Look, I mean, a guy can be as intimidating as he wants. Mike Fetters looked intimidating, but was he a great pitcher? No. He was a mediocre average pitcher for a little while, and then the rest of the time he sucked. All right? So, intimidation is only one part of the equation. How did he do? How did he play? How did he stay healthy? No, was he a transcendent player? Did he carry a team? I mean, even if he didn't carry a team, that's not important. But the point is, was he, you know, was he a difference maker? Yes, he was. But, okay, the point is, did he have the kind of career, production-wise, that really made you look at it and just without even really thinking about it, you said, oh, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. No question about it. Absolutely. And if you looked at the stat line, you're like, wow, Hall of Fame. What a great career he had. Not necessarily. I mean, you have some years where he did, but then you had a bunch of years, too many in my opinion, where he was just average to mediocre to just flat out bad. And that's my problem with Jim Rice. I mean, you know, power to him. He got in the Hall of Fame. I'm sure he deserves it. Well, unless you just simply factor in his actual production, which I think is okay. Good. Very good. Kind of good. Pretty good.
But not always the best.
So it's like, if you can't go to that conclusion where you say, boom, Hall of Fame, then maybe he's just part of the Hall of Good. The Hall of Good or the Hall of Consistent. See, because you talk about a guy who's gotten a record for showing up every day, like Cal Ripken, that alone is not going to get you in the Hall of Fame. Now, it depends on what position he played. He played shortstop for most of his career, and the production that he brought up that he had as a shortstop, very good, especially in the power department, no question. But Jim Rice wasn't a second baseman. You know, he wasn't a middle infielder. He wasn't any of that. And so, you have to go shoot a little higher. The bar has to be pretty high. And, you know, he had some years where he was good, but there were some years where he really wasn't that great. So it's not automatic. I mean, it took him years to get into the Hall of Game. From the moment he retired in August 3rd, 1989, to about now, nearly August 2009, so it took him 20 years. He needed some help. And that's the whole thing. I mean, so Rice, I'm happy for him, I guess, that he's in the Hall of Fame, but he's not a boom Hall of Famer. And for that reason, I kind of straddle the line a little bit. I'm not really sure. I'm undecided. I've been like, well, I don't know. I mean, was he, you know, you have to think about it, which means I don't know if he really was that surefire a pick to be in the Hall of Fame. Now, there have been more egregious errors in this selection process in the past, and it's certainly true that the MLB has to come up with at least one guy to get in the Hall of Fame. I mean, I would love to see one year where the field is so thin, baseball simply just goes, you know what, we're not going to invite anybody in the Hall of Fame. You know, there's nobody out there that really deserves it this year, and anybody who does is not eligible yet. We're not doing Hall of Fame this year. Just go on, have some tea and cookies. We're just going to relax a little bit. Just we're going to take this day off. Cooperstown, oh, they don't have enough space anyway. We'll wait until next year. That will not happen. So eventually guys like this will be considered. And there you go. So that is the story about the Hall of Fame this year. More of the same discussion next year, I'm sure. Well, let's see. I wanted to bring up a quick thing about Kenny Wallace, a NASCAR driver who was prevented from, who was not going to get any support, sponsorship support from the U.S. Border Patrol, who sponsors his car, because the race is going to be in Montreal. It's pretty short-sighted, the U.S. Border Patrol, but at least they're acting their part. I guess I understand that. But poor Kenny Wallace, he had no money to help support his race. So he goes on to his own Facebook page, according to John Kakis, the AP sports writer, and wrote something on his own Facebook page asking about, well, I wonder if fans could give me like 10 bucks or 20 bucks or something like that to help me through this race. Oh, wait a minute. That wasn't Kenny Wallace speaking. That was his fans. His fans were like, hey, this thing sucks. Let's go raise some money to get him going. And they did. They raised a bunch of money. I mean, the whole idea that they would even consider this was really quite a tribute to Wallace's popularity and his spirit and his essence. That's great. And so what happened was the fans just started saying, okay, well, let's see. If all you fans could give me, like, chip in, like, $20, $50. And the idea comes from a man named Jim Ryan, a retired car salesman, 64 years old, and a huge fan of Kenny Wallace. And he just wrote up on his Facebook page, hey, you know, fans, if you just give us like $20 each, just a few fans, we could give him the money to help get into this race in Montreal. And they did. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? Unbelievable. Apparently, they wanted to raise $100,000. They've come up $10,000 short, but just even the fact that they got to that point is just amazing. That is a really true testament to the human spirit. I'm really happy about that. I think that's a really cool story. So hopefully your day is cool here in the city as you try to battle the hot weather. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.